is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington.
Take that house! Take it now! Take it now!
It's been almost 100 days since Trump supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol on January 6. The attack left 5 people dead and about 140 members of law enforcement injured. Now, nearly 400 people are facing federal charges. Far-right groups have been deplatformed, and the National Guard is still patrolling the Capitol building. But while some things have changed, a lot has also stayed the same. A bipartisan commission to study the attack appears to have stalled, and Republican legislators who once faced calls for censure or expulsion have weathered the outcry largely unscathed. What have we learned since the attack? What haven't we learned? And have we changed enough to keep it from happening again? Luke Broadwater is a congressional correspondent for the New York Times. He specializes in security and the Capitol Police, and he joins us now. Luke, welcome to 1A.
Hi, how are you?
Thanks for having me. Also with us, Brandi Zadrozny, a senior reporter at NBC News, where she specializes in disinformation and extremism. Brandi, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Brandi, I want to start with you. You've been covering extremism, particularly internet extremism, for years now. How did the insurrection change the equation for far-right groups, both online and in person?
Well, I think what we have to sort of talk about first is 2020 and what happened there, because I have been reporting on this a long time, and 2020 was just pretty insane. You know, we had the pandemic, we had militia organizing at sort of a new ramped up scale, political polarization, of course, with the election, and then, you know, a lot of disinformation about COVID, about, you know, a rigged election, about the threat of Antifa. At the same time, you know, we had little Capitol protests happening, or little Capitol sieges or Capitol violence happening in states throughout 2020. So we saw sort of the precursors to the Capitol siege happening. And, you know, it was just a really incredibly bold time for extremists. They organized in the open on Facebook. They were stating their plans up until the Capitol attack in open forums just over and over and over again. A lot has changed since the 6th. And what we're seeing now is really a backlash from what happened at the 6th and the increased scrutiny that happened after the 6th. So, you know, it's almost like it's a lot like after the Charlottesville Unite the Right rally. After that happened, after that full-throated hate was seen by everyone across the country, after after people started getting prosecuted for their involvement in that attack, which killed a woman, like, people went mostly underground, the white supremacist movement, the alt-right movement. And that's what we're seeing now. We're seeing extremist movements being driven underground by this increased scrutiny from the media, from the, like you just said, 400 prosecutions right now, from federal agencies, and then also, you know, an increased energy from far-left activists who really have upped their game and continue to infiltrate the private online spaces of extremists and disrupt their activities, their attempts to communicate and organize. That's been all really largely successful.
Luke, you just got to look at one of three reports into what happened the day of the attack. First of all, what are these reports? Who issued them?
Yeah, so after January 6th, Congress has undertaken a number of reviews. And today, one of the committees will hear from the Inspector General for the Capitol Police. He is their internal watchdog, and he has issued two reports that are both classified or law enforcement sensitive. They focus primarily on intelligence gathering, preparedness, the type of equipment Capitol Police had that day, January 6th, and the type of instructions they were given. What the Inspector General has found is that Capitol Police did have intelligence ahead of January 6th that there would be white supremacists in the crowd that day, that there would likely be militia members in the crowd that day, that they would likely bring weapons, and that the Capitol itself could be the target. And so there was this intelligence, and there was an intelligence report issued by the Capitol Police's own intelligence division 3 days before January 6th saying this. In addition, the Capitol Police also had intelligence from Homeland Security and the FBI with similar warnings, warnings about plots and threats against lawmakers, about a sharing of images and maps of the tunnel system of the Capitol complex. So the Inspector General is faulting leadership of Capitol Police for not taking this intelligence more seriously and for either discounting it or overlooking it in favor of conflicting intelligence, which they ultimately decided they would go with, which was that this would be a protest like some others that had happened in the previous weeks where, you know, there would be protesting, but not a, a mob violence against Capitol Police and against the building itself. In addition, the investigative report is looking at the kind of equipment that Capitol Police had and some of the failings where they simply did not have police riot gear out for officers. They had shields that would shatter because they had been stored improperly. There's one sort of sad moment where a unit of Capitol Police go to get a bunch of shields off a bus and find that the shields are locked on the bus and they can't get in. Mm-hmm. And so they have to go back into the fight, basically unprotected against the mob. So there's, you know, sort of tragic details like that that I'm sure we'll hear more about at the hearing.
We're discussing the aftermath of the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. We'll have more from you and our guests in a moment.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Hint, fruit-infused water with no calories or sweeteners. Hint water comes in over 25 flavors. The watermelon water actually tastes like watermelon. The blackberry water tastes like blackberries. Hint is water with a touch of true fruit flavor. You can get Hint water at stores, or you can have it delivered directly to your door. When you buy two cases, you'll get a third case free and free shipping. Visit drinkhint.com and use promo code NPR at checkout.
Whether you're looking to discover a new series to binge, find your next great read, or check out that movie everyone's talking about, NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast is your guide to all things entertainment. Every weekday, we keep pop culture in high spirits. Listen now to the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR.
We're discussing the aftermath of the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. Let's get back to the conversation. We got this message from Charlie on Facebook who says, I think a lot of the laid-back approach by law enforcement was due to the fact that no one expected Republicans to act up like they did. Conservatives are known for being pro-family, pro-America, pro-law enforcement, pro-military, so there was no expectation that there would be any violence. Brandy, I want to hear from you here because to hear that police didn't necessarily believe the intelligence that was coming, that these groups would storm the Capitol despite all the evidence that they would. What's your perspective, speaking as someone who saw tons of evidence that was propagating online?
I mean, my only thought here is, and we have, I feel like I've said, you know, we told you this was going to happen. We literally reported a story the day before the Capitol attack saying, I think the headline was something like, online groups plan attacks to the Capitol in the open or something. It was just like so blatant. And we saw those maps as well. It was, you know, on these sort of not that fringy websites. We saw them on happening on Facebook, on Parler. I think the point that Luke made, though, before is that there had been two other similar rallies in D.C. that were organized at a large scale by the same groups, pro-Trump, Women for Trump groups. And so it's, and when you see stuff happening so in the open, it's almost like it's happening right in front of your face. So it's, I don't know, it doesn't follow the normal pattern, I guess, of people planning things in the shadows and then acting out those extremism plans. Like it almost seemed to me too, just watching it, it was like an unbelievable aspect of it. Like, I know they said they were going to do it, but they're really doing it. Mm-hmm. And I think to the point of the Facebook post that you just made too, I think that it is really important to realize that the majority of the people there at the Capitol that day were there at the behest of the president in effort to spread and to counter this misinformation that the election had been stolen. I've talked to a lot of them, their grandmothers, their, you know, people that had small children in tow. A lot of these people aren't who we think of when we think of extremists. But I've also talked to a lot of people that were among those, you know, they considered themselves red-blooded conservative folks who actually got caught up in the mob of real extremists and were radicalized almost on the spot. And that says something about sort of the nature of extremism and how quickly people can turn to violence when they're fed a steady diet of disinformation and led by a leader that is seemingly calling them to act on that.
Let's get to this question from Troy in Cincinnati.
Something I've been wondering about is whether congressional inquiries and other reflections on the riots have considered the role of race in planning for and then responding to the riot. I'm curious whether there's been any reflection on the fact that there might have been a primarily white crowd anticipated and reflection on whether that might have had a bearing on the way Capitol Police and agencies, other federal agencies, planned for and responded to the incident.
Is the role of race and implicit bias in this attack something that's being discussed among investigators or members of Congress?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I know a bunch of staff, particularly black staff on Capitol Hill, have explicitly asked for that to be part of any congressional inquiries. We know that acting Capitol Police Chief Pittman has testified and answered questions about this very topic. In her view, their law enforcement's judgment was not clouded by race. But in the view of many lawmakers, it's hard to see how it couldn't have been, considering the very militarized position that law enforcement had towards the Black Lives Matter protests during the summer, and then the more relaxed position that we saw on January 6th.
We're discussing the aftermath of the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. We'll be back with more in a moment.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Joe knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A. Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Joe knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A.
On NPR's Consider This podcast, we don't just help you keep up with the news, we help you make sense of what's happening, like why the housing market is wild right now, what safe looks like once you're vaccinated, and how an increase in border crossings is testing the Biden administration. All of that in 15 minutes every weekday. Listen now to Consider This from NPR.
We're discussing what's happened in the last 100 days since the Capitol insurrection on January 6th. Let's go to this question we got from Julie in Maryland.
Is anything being done to hold any of the representatives in Congress responsible for what happened, or any connection, their connection to it? And also, is anything being addressed about former president and his involvement in this, inciting this riot?
We also got this tweet from WG who says, when will Trump be charged criminally? Luke, can you take a crack at those questions?
Yeah, sure. We can start with President Trump first. Sort of famously, when the leader of the Republicans in the Senate, Mitch McConnell, said that he would not vote to convict Trump on the impeachment charge, he said this does not absolve him from civil or criminal responsibility once he leaves office. To date, we have seen one lawsuit filed against President Trump by two Capitol Police officers that seek to hold him financially responsible for their pain and suffering and the injuries that they endured at the hands of the pro-Trump mob. So there is a civil suit going on as we speak. In terms of members of Congress, this is a more, I guess, trickier answer. Right after January 6th, there were a number of calls from Democrats in Congress to investigate, censure, and possibly expel those members of Congress, the far-right Congress people who had fueled the fire of the mob with their rhetoric. To date, though, most of those inquiries or legislation has stalled. We do know that the federal prosecutors in D.C. are continuing to look at whether or not any members of Congress coordinated with the mob or with extremists. There were some allegations about lawmakers giving tours to people who then participated in the attack. To date, we have not seen evidence that those tours happened. But we do know that that is a matter currently under investigation.
Now, Brandy, you mentioned some of the white supremacist groups being deplatformed and going underground. But what kind of efforts are we seeing to root those groups out altogether? Because there have been warnings about the threat they pose to national security for a long time, but there wasn't a lot of action around that.
You mean online?
I mean in online and just in recruitment and the threat to national security.
Well, I think everybody's in sort of response mode. And so, you know, you have the platforms, especially like Facebook's Dangerous Orgs division, really watching these spaces and making sure that these groups don't pop back up on Facebook. So they're doing the work there. Telegram has nuked a bunch of the Nazi channels that used to make up the platform. But white supremacists are still organizing there. I mean, the thing is, at least online, you know, there's a good deal of research out there that says deplatforming really works. And basically it says, you know, when you turn down the volume on misinformation or hateful content, then what you have is you have people being kicked off platforms that spread that content, and you have just a nicer place to be generally. And you really hamper their ability to recruit. But what happens also is that, you know, there are still going to be spaces online where people share and hate. We're never going to fix that problem. And the issue there too is that the extremist ideology is in those smaller spaces. We know from research actually becomes more toxic, and the people that remain in those groups actually become more radicalized and quicker, and they're more likely to do real-life violence. Now, from what I hear from the national security people at NBC is that, you know, federal agencies are taking this incredibly seriously, and they're working to sort of root out the problem online and off. But the extremism researchers that I talk to a lot are just really collectively holding their breath. I think that not more than one person has suggested to me that they're worried about, you know, so-called lone wolf attacks, small pack attacks, and perhaps, you know, a mass casualty domestic terror attack. Mm-hmm.
We got this message from Robert on Facebook who says it was an unbelievable breakdown in security. It's almost like some higher-ups wanted the insurrection to succeed. The National Guard and military stood down like they were hoping for a coup. It came very close to being a real ugly tragedy and successful insurrection. And Peter says, were Capitol Police leadership complicit either by commission or omission? Luke, have you been able to glean any of that from the reports that have been released so far?
Well, I do think there are very concerning critiques, both of the Defense Department and of Capitol Police and others in federal law enforcement for their actions leading up to the attack on the Capitol and for their actions that day. We do know, and this has been, you know, well documented in congressional testimony, that some senior people within the military, even as the mob was attacking the Capitol, had broken inside, was banging on the doors of the House, still did not want to send in the National Guard that day because they were worried about what they called visuals or optics, about the guard putting down protesters, specifically supporters of the sitting president who was their boss. And the same concern, it appears, affected some of Capitol Police's actions. We do know from the Inspector General's report that they were told not to use their most powerful, less lethal weapons, things like, you know, stun grenades or powerful techniques that are, you know, theoretically do not kill people, although sometimes they can. And the Inspector General said that this was a mistake and that they should have used every less than lethal weapon at their disposal to try to put down this mob and more quickly and more forcefully. So he didn't name who gave that order. I think that'll be a question that comes up during his testimony, who specifically gave that order. But we do know that higher ups in the security did not want to use every tool at their disposal.
I want to get
ahead of January 6th.
We got this from Marcus on Twitter. He says, I and many others would like to know if this assault on democracy and the ideology that led to this insurrection will continue to be shrugged off. It sure feels like it is. If this country is going to last another 300 or more years, this kind of undermining cannot continue to happen. And just very briefly from both of you, I want to hear if you think enough has changed to keep this from happening again. Brandy?
I think that there's a real desire by a lot of people, you know, including me sometimes, to want to go back to normal, say, okay, you know, what was a very divisive presidency, a very politically polarized time, maybe that's over. Maybe we can all just go back to business as usual. We're not seeing, you know, white nationalists rallying in the streets anymore. We're not seeing militias and Black Lives Matter protesters clashing in the streets anymore. We can just go back to normal. But I think, I think we need to be vigilant always about the threat from extremists and the far right. And I don't think that we are still at the level of vigilance that we need to be.
Luke?
Yes, I do think that security will be improved at the Capitol. I know they're going to spend a lot of money to make sure that happens. But two, we have not seen reform to the system that allowed this scenario to play out, and that is that this legislation has not been introduced to change the procedure that would allow Congress to potentially overrule the results of state elections. And I do think that that's something Congress would like to consider.
That's Luke Broadwater with the New York Times and Brandy Zadrozny, a senior reporter at NBC News. Luke, Brandy, thanks. Today's conversation was produced by Paige Osborne and was edited by Barb Anguiano. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and let's talk more soon. This is 1A.